Radio 24 hours a day.
You guys are the best station in town.
You got the best radio station going.
You guys are the best, man.
We are the Roar, part of the ESPN family.
Hour number two of the program here on a Tuesday with Faxon Childress and John Hight on 105.5 97.5. The Roar, 654 Roar is the number. We're going to wrap our NFL talk in this segment, then take Bert's phone call and shift gears to some college football. John, the last couple games to get out of the way. Do want to talk a little bit about the Jacksonville Jaguars and the Houston Texans. Jaguars improved to 2-1. They get by the skin of their teeth against a Texans team that I said last week, I think the bottom's going to fall out of this thing in Houston, and there might be some people that lose their jobs. Offensive line is nowhere near good enough. Stroud is regressing and struggling. D'Amico Ryans has very, very poor game and clock IQ, and the offensive coordinator tried to say last year that Bobby Slalik was getting scapegoated. That looks right so far through three games. When you have an O-line like what Houston has, it doesn't matter who's calling plays because Stroud's on his butt pretty much every play. Don't think the Jaguars are world beaters, but it's a good start to the Cohen era that they're 2-1 thus far.
You're 2-1, 2-0 at home. I think you take it if you're the Jaguars.
Yeah.
I am going to issue a challenge to the Jacksonville Jaguars. I want you to try catching the football.
Oh, my gosh. Yes, dude.
Brian Thomas Jr. and Parker Washington had a combined 6 catches on a combined 17 targets. 6 catches on 17 targets. Thomas was 2 of 6. Washington was 4 of 11. Can't have that. Can't have that. If Jacksonville wants to win and you want Trevor Lawrence to continue to take steps forward, those guys have to help him out around him.
When I look at the Jaguars, I do think it's a fair takeaway, but I'm going to get ahead of it before somebody gets in on the text line. They're a Brian Thomas catch away from being 3-0. If he catches that ball on 4th and 5 in Cincinnati, they're a 3-0 football team right now, and I do think that's worth acknowledging. But at the same time, like, what's the funk with Brian Thomas Jr.? Like, what's the glitch? Like, what am I missing? Because I get it, he had the big 46-yard slant that he took, and they ended up winning the game as a byproduct of that. He had multiple more drops in this game. He was one of the best contested catch guys in the league last year, and that seemingly vanished into thin air. How did they get him out of his funk? Is this a Shane Waldron thing who has kind of a trajectory of killing wide receiver ones everywhere he goes like the Grim Reaper? Is it mental for him? Is it a Trevor thing? Is it a Cohen thing? What's up with Brian Thomas Jr.?
To me, it's mental because he's doing the same thing Malik Nabers is doing in New York.
Yeah.
Two guys came from the same offense, same cast. Like, I think they're both just like, wow, we're not playing with Daniels anymore. This isn't fun.
Yeah.
I think you're seeing some diva mentality out of both of those guys. Feeling like they're not getting enough quarterback play.
Yeah.
Just the way that I read it on the outside looking in.
Quez from Clemson says, according to Cohen, he was going into last game's week's game with a wrist injury, so he could still be dealing with that. Maybe that's a part of it, but like even with that, you got to catch the football. You got to catch the football, and we're used to Brian Thomas Jr. playing at a high level. I'm holding him to that standard that he set for himself last year. I think he gets it figured out. The Jaguars' biggest thing right now is they need to find a better way to integrate Travis Hunter within the offense. He's giving good reps at corner right now. They're not getting him as fully incorporated as I would hope or anticipate on the offensive side of the ball, and I'm not one of those guys that like advocates for giving people the ball if I think it's undeserved. But in the case of the Jacksonville Jaguars, when you trade the 5th overall pick and a future first to go up to number 2 to get a guy that Gladstone calls transcendent and a lifeline for the franchise, probably a good idea to give that guy more than 2 or 3 targets a game on offense, just as a general principle. So I'm going to hope that they can get on the same page with Trav and get him more incorporated. A couple more quick hitters on the NFL before we shift gears. Buccaneers game-winning drive for the 3rd straight game against the Jets. They squeak by 29-27. Weird game. Jets get a fluky turnover and put up 21 in the 4th quarter. Not really sure how the Jets were even in the game, but Baker Mayfield did it again. I mean, you're talking 3 games, John. On the road in Atlanta, 23-20, Baker Mayfield game-winning drive. On the road in Houston, 20-19, Baker Mayfield game-winning drive. At home against the Jets, 29-27, Baker Mayfield game-winning drive. 3 for 3, he's been the clutchest quarterback in football. He's executed when he needs to, and I mean, this league is about showing up and making the big-time throws and big-time plays and the big-time moments. That's exactly what Baker Mayfield has done to date thus far for the Buccaneers. Not looking forward to this week's matchup between Tampa Bay and Philadelphia, because full transparency, they own the living daylights out of the Philadelphia Eagles, man. I mean, they own us worse than any team I've ever seen. 2021 playoffs, they blew us off the face of the earth. 2022 regular season, they whooped our butt. 2023 regular season, they whooped our butt. They turned around in the playoffs and blew us out again, and then they beat us again last year. I'm tired of playing this team. I don't want to play them. Not looking forward to this week. Not looking forward to this week at all. Last couple things on the NFL. Herbert makes a couple big-time plays down the stretch. Chargers improve to 3-0. Bo Nix might suck. That's my biggest takeaway from this game. Receivers are running wide open the whole time for Denver. Should have won the game. Simple as that. Bo Nix has to play at a higher level. Caleb Williams has the best game of his career. Then again, I think John and I could probably throw for 200-plus on Dallas' secondary, considering Russell Wilson put up 450 yards and then turned around against the Chiefs and threw for, like, what, 100? That's a freebie right now with Dallas' defense. They've got nobody in the secondary, man. Trayvon Diggs is getting abused.
Yeah, exactly. That's nice you're able to pick on. And yeah, they say respect your elders. And watching the Bears pick on Trayvon Diggs just isn't very nice. Respect your elders.
Yeah.
Come on, Caleb Williams. All seriousness, yeah, I think you're very correct here. It's a nice moral victory for the Bears. I'm sure they feel very great about themselves.
They needed it.
Yeah, that's great.
Win number one for Ben Johnson.
That's fantastic. You beat a team that I am extremely low on, so cool. Good for you.
Next week, they're at the Raiders, which could serve as a get-right spot. The Commanders blew them off the face of Earth. Marcus Mariota hung 41. What is this, 2015? What's going on? Shout-out to the Commanders. Big win for them.
Do not let Marcus Mariota do that on Sunday in Atlanta.
Yeah.
Do not let that happen.
Jobs will be lost. Cardinals 49ers, 16-15 49ers win. Mac Jones game-winning drive. I've got a couple takeaways from this game. Two things. Number one.
I'm sorry.
The most improved unit in the entire NFL outside of Carolina is the Cardinals defense. The Cardinals defense is really freaking good, and it's legitimate, and it pains me to say this as numero uno Jonathan Gannon hater, but he's got his guys, he's got scheme fits. Josh Sweat has impacted this group immediately off the edge. He's getting pressures, waking up out of bed, eating Frosted Flakes. He's already at the quarterback. Seriously. Guy's been unbelievable this year. Their defense is playing unbelievable. Maserati Marv is Mitsubishi Marv right now. I don't know what's going on with him. I'm really concerned about the trajectory of Marvin Harrison Jr. I thought Kyler Murray did just about all he could, and I'm a skeptic in comparison to most on Kyler's ability. Harrison had 6 targets, 3 catches, 3 drops, and all were like uncontested, butt naked, wide open.
Wide open first downs.
Is this even the same player we watched at Ohio State? He looks like a shell of himself, John. What's going on with Marvin Harrison?
To me, it looks like he's just not dialed in between the years right now. I also think this is a team right now that is took about as big of a gut punch from a loss of James Conner for the season on Sunday. This is a team that I don't know how they get up off the mat. I really don't. There are some individual pieces and things here that I like, but I think for the most part, a lot of this is broken.
Yeah, I agree with
that. And you're kind of stuck with some of what the Kyler Murray contract is.
Another takeaway, and again, I know some of this is O-line play, interior O-line play hasn't been great in San Francisco. I think Father Time and injuries have caught up to a certain extent to Christian McCaffrey. He's still really good. It's not the same level of explosiveness. And again, running back shelf life, he's already exceeded what the expectations are there with his size and stature and the amount of hits he takes. But I'm starting to think McCaffrey's closer to the 5th best running back in the league than the best one. And that's really the first time in his career I can say that.
Are the Kansas City Chiefs improving or are the Giants that bad?
I think that the Giants' offense is that bad. I don't think that the Giants' defense is bad. I know that they got their bell rung by Dallas. I do think that the defensive infrastructure is in place here. I think my biggest takeaway... Front seven-wise. My biggest takeaway in this one is how bad is the Cowboys' secondary if Russell Wilson hung 400 yards on you and had that type of performance? I think we need to consider a quarterback change in New York. I know Brian Daboll said he's opening it up this week. I don't know if Jackson Dart is ready and or the answer. Personally, I would like to see Jameis with some of these weapons. I think Jameis could provide a little bit of a shot in the arm to this team. But I don't know, man. I don't know. I thought the Giants were going to end up getting to 7 or 8 this year. And maybe I was just wrong in my evaluation. I don't know what's wrong with this team right now. They're not getting Neighbors Incorporated. Russell Wilson's been horrible. This thing is broken right now, and I'm fearing for Brian Daboll's job status. I think that this could result in a firing if this trend continues. Your thoughts?
I think it could. I don't know if they're going to make a firing that early. I think he does have the break glass in case of emergency in Jackson Dart. I think he'll go to that here pretty soon because I think Giants fans deserve to see what you have with Dart and Scadaboo.
Yeah, excited for
that. As a 1-2 punch in that backfield. Especially with Tyrone Tracy, it looks like he's going to be out for the next 2 to 4 weeks.
Oof.
So expect to see more Devin Singletary. That's never a good thing. But Scadaboo is already emerged to me as the player that Daboll trusts almost the most in this offense.
Yeah.
Pretty quickly. I mean, when you've got Neighbors dropping the football, being checked out, Wandale Robinson, I think, is just kind of a gadget guy. Darius Slayton kind of is who he is. I think Scadaboo, if they're actually going to do anything offensively, it's going to have to be through him.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I'm here for it because I loved watching him in college. And his running style hasn't changed a bit since he's gotten to the pros. If anything, he's trying to initiate more contact in the NFL, and I love watching him play.
He's a great player.
Oh, yeah, he's fantastic. It's what the Giants need, somebody with a little bit of fire and passion.
Indeed. I definitely agree with that assessment. All right, let's take phone calls. We're going to shift gears to college football here. Probably going to talk a little Clemson X's and O's, talk a little more general college football with some great games on the gridiron this past weekend. Bert, thanks for holding on and being patient, my friend. Hope you had a good weekend.
Well, I'll tell you the truth, guys. It was 0-4 for me this weekend. All the teams I have a vested interest in. It's a pretty bad weekend when the best thing that happens is watch the Braves sweep Detroit. But I know, yeah, well, that's another story. But and I know y'all analyzed the Clemson game up and down yesterday, and there's a lot more than just one problem. Same thing with Carolina. But I saw two plays in each game. I saw one play in each game. I thought encapsulated the season.
Mm-hmm.
And let's start with Clemson first. They were driving. It was midfield. You know, still in the ball game. You got Adam Randall averaging 9.5 yards a carry at that
yep.
point in the game.
Yep.
They go quarterback, keeper, or you know, I guess it was an option play. Instead of just giving the ball straight to Randall for the first down, and Cade gets hit at the line of scrimmage, and they don't get the first down. Then Carolina, even though we're playing like the worst football game I've ever seen, we're still in it. We throw a 51-yard bomb to the 1.5-yard line. You've got first and goal with a 246-pound quarterback, and you go play action, get sacked for 15 yards, and then have two holding penalties, and it took a terrific throw just to get back to a field goal. If you don't have enough confidence in your offensive lines to give the ball to a man who's running 9.5 yards per carry or 246-pound quarterback to go a yard and a half, then there's problems right there. And I just was so frustrated at watching both those games because there were times I thought the games could have turned, and it just didn't happen. And that's just kind of what – and that was my take on it.
I think your take is more than fair, Bert. And in the case of South Carolina, when you have a dynamic playmaker like Lenoris Sellers, you're going to have a chance at every game you play, right? And logically,
yeah, I think so. I mean, he threw the ball pretty well the other night.
He did.
Really did.
I thought he did some good things, and I think he's continuing to kind of improve as a passer. I just think my main concern, as I kind of articulated in the preseason, and obviously I was wrong on my Clemson evaluation in the preseason. Good Lord, I mean, what in the world's happening here in Tiger Town? But with South Carolina, the biggest problem for me is just like Shula getting on the same page as Sellers and like putting him in a position to do what he does best on the field. But the problem right now for South Carolina as well, Bert, is I think you're seeing quarterback's taking a lot of blame here in Tiger Town, which I think is partially deserved, but the O-line play has been garbage. It's a similar situation down in Columbia where it feels like Sellers is running for his life on just about every play.
Yeah, and the fact that you call a play action from a yard and a half out of the goal line tells you that you have no confidence in the offensive line. I mean, but you know, what I understand, both Clemson and Carolina have recruited, you know, very well on the offensive line in terms of star, you know, 4- and 5-star guys. And it's like, all of a sudden, they don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Clemson does, you know, missed assignments. Just it's just real frustrating because, and we talked about this at the start of the season. I thought, you know, I don't think Cade is a bad quarterback. I don't think, you know, and I obviously don't think that Sellers is. But if you don't have the guys in front doing their job, I don't care how good you are, you're just not going to be able to produce the way that you want it to. But anyway, I'm, you know, I was very frustrated, still frustrated with the way things are going this season for both teams, and we just had to just kind of ride out the storm and see what happens.
Just got to ride out the storm and keep fighting the good fight, brother. Well, Bert, you're welcome anytime here on the program. We really appreciate your phone call this morning, and let's hope the Tigers and Gamecocks can both get on the right track these next couple weeks.
Let's hope so. Thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate it.
Of course. Thanks for the call, Bert. 654-ROAR is the number if you want to check in like Bert. We're going to dive into the weeds with some more stuff on Clemson because yesterday was more of a general big picture talk. We're going to take a segment. We're going to talk where things went wrong, X's and O's wise, and then the actual football game. So if you'd like to get in on that, 654-ROAR is the number. Also going to talk some more general college football because Duke got a big win over NC State. Michigan went on the road to beat Nebraska. We're going to run through some pick 'em contest results and more. Stick with us here with Faxon and John.
Currently car shopping? State Credit Union now has auto loan rates as low as 4.25% APR. Plus, you'll have no car payment for up to 90 days, just in time for the holidays. Visit one of State Credit Union's 19 full-service branches or their website, scscu.com, and apply online for your new car loan today. That's scscu.com. Terms and conditions apply. Equal housing lender, federally insured by the NCUA.
If you are a business owner, the integrity of your roof is probably the last thing on your mind. Adams & Co. Roofing Specialists are here to alleviate that burden with a free, no-obligation roof inspection for your business. Their team checks your roof for leaks, draining issues, missing shingles, storm damage to avoid costly issues in the future. Call Adams & Co. today for all of your commercial roofing needs at 864-260-0080. That's 260-0080.
Did you know that Ingles sells a huge variety of organic items, or that they run their own dairy, or that they only serve USDA Choice and Prime meat? Did you know that they have more local craft beer than any place else, or that they have Energy Smart stores, or that they professionally slice and package imported cheese from Europe? Did you know about their giant international aisle, local farm partnerships, curbside pickup, wine department, or that they donate 3,956 meals a day to local food banks? Well, now you do. It's all in the bag. Ingles, low prices, love the savings.
Danny Ford here for my good friends at Bennett Equipment, who have stood the test of time selling and renting construction equipment for 25 years now. Bennett is one of the top five dealers in the country for Takeuchi compact equipment, and when you deal with Bennett and Takeuchi, you get the quality, dependability, and service you expect and deserve. So call or stop by today and tell them Danny Ford sent you. Take it from me. When you need equipment, buy it or rent it from Bennett.
Twin Peaks is the best in the game. Here, your favorite drafts are poured at a frosty 29 degrees and rare barrel-aged whiskeys are served just the way you want them. It's bigger game days and bolder fight nights. I mean, where else can you find a scratch kitchen that always comes in clutch every day from lunch to late night? Only at Twin Peaks, the number one sports bar.
Twin Peaks Scratch Kitchen scores every time. Dig into hand-smashed burgers, chef-inspired flatbreads, and more at your local Lodge.
Don't wait for your HVAC to break down. Keep it running strong with a maintenance plan from Estes Heating and Air. Their expert technicians make sure your system is running efficiently year-round, helping you avoid surprise repairs and high energy bills. With priority service and peace of mind, it's comfort you can count on. Call Estes Heating and Air today or visit estesheatingair.com to schedule your maintenance check today. Estes Heating and Air, your comfort is their priority.
Break out the bell bottoms and fire up the disco ball. Staying Alive is back at the Walhalla Performing Arts Center, October 3rd and 4th. It's the ultimate Bee Gees tribute, bringing the groove, the glitter, and all the hits you love. From Jive Talkin' to Stayin' Alive, this high-energy show will have you boogieing all night long. Don't miss your chance to relive the golden age of disco. Get your tickets now at WalhallaPAC.com.
Hey Tiger fans, I'm Morgan Coleman, proud Clemson soccer alum and upstate native. I may have hung up my cleats, but now spend my time assisting buyers and sellers in the Greenville, South Carolina area. My goal is to provide my clients peace of mind during one of the most important decisions of their life. It's important to have early conversations with a trusted realtor to help navigate the current market. If you are considering buying or selling, let's chat. Call me at 864-313-7639 or search Morgan Coleman Real Estate online to get started.
Greenville has a long mattress manufacturing history going back to 1931 when Orders Mattress Company was born. Today, the fourth generation of the Orders family is still making some of the best mattresses in the U.S. Visit Engineered Sleep's one-of-a-kind mattress showroom on Pleasantburg Drive, across from Krispy Kreme, and find your next mattress. Enjoy free in-home delivery, a 100-night sleep trial, and of course, a great night of sleep. visit engineersleap.com.
Is your crawl space damp or musty? Water in your crawl space can cause wood to rot and create an environment for mold and mildew that can make its way inside your home. Canty Foundation Specialist specializes in crawl space repair. Call us today for your free inspection so you can have the peace of mind knowing your crawl space is dry and your home is protected. Call today, 864-641-0176, or visit cantycanfixit.com.
Transforming your land with a John Deere compact tractor is as easy as connect, latch, load, haul, spread. Cutting grass is as simple as roll, click, mow. Box blading is as effortless as hook, lock, grade. And backhoeing is as convenient as turnaround, switch, dig. Because when you've got the versatility to tackle just about any job and dealer support in your own backyard, you just have to get in the seat. Find the right compact tractor for you at JohnDeere.com.
Broadcasting live from the Upcountry Fiber Studios, this is 105.5 and 97.5 The Roar. Upcountry Fiber is a stronger connection.
Tired of all the fake news in the sports world?
He read an article.
I read it too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Don't believe everything you hear on the radio.
That's where we come in, to give you the truth in sports. We are The Roar, where every day is game day.
Hour number two of the program continues here with Facts and Childress and John Hyde on 105.5, 97.5 The Roar. 654-ROAR is the number if you'd like to check in. A couple texts to get to, then we're going to take JD and a couple more loading up on the phone lines. Texter gets in. He says, I remember the beginning of the summer when they announced Clemson versus the South Carolina game. It's going to be a noon game. Everybody was complaining, but the way they played so far, they might just need to scrimmage at this point. Yeah, heck, they might even just need to go play at Bowman Field at this point with the way both teams are trending. Hasn't been great. Has not been great by any means, that's for certain. But, you know, hoping both teams here in the state of South Carolina can turn it around and salvage the season because both teams suffering two conference losses already. Obviously, a lot of goals go out the window when it comes to that, but it just is what it is. Texter gets in. The South Carolina line did it with smoke and mirrors last year. This year, the mirror is broken and the fire is out. And, yeah, again, you know, not necessarily in the place to throw shots or given I told you so quip because I was wrong on Clemson with my preseason evaluation, as was pretty much everybody in the country. But the South Carolina team kind of looks exactly how I anticipated. My biggest thing I said repeatedly this offseason was, how are you going to replace Rocket Sanders in the run game? I thought he was the most underrated player in the entire country last year. Won you the game against Mizzou. Was huge with crucial plays down the stretch against Clemson. Even though Sellers made that fantastic run, you're not in that game without Rocket Sanders being that steady back in the run game. So run game hasn't been able to be established. Offensive line's not giving Sellers a lot of help. Your wide receiver one doesn't want to be hit and doesn't really even belong in pads because he's a track athlete. There's problems. There's problems. I will say, I think Clayton White's done a good job with the defensive unit. And I think that if Sellers stayed in that whole game against Vanderbilt, the score would have looked a lot closer, even if you wouldn't have won. I don't think you would have given up 31 because you wouldn't have been able to keep the ball a little bit longer. But there's definitely some foundational cracks in Columbia, as there are in Tigertown as well. And that much is difficult to dispute at this juncture. Let's get JD and Anderson. Then we're coming to Ted and Sumter. JD, good to hear from you. We appreciate the phone call.
Hey, how you doing, Doc?
Doing well, man. How are you?
Doing good. You know, just pretty livid about this Clemson team right now, but I think we'll get it figured out.
Yeah.
I think Cade is still the best. I think he's still the main. I don't think it's his fault. I think it's just Dabo don't play the best players like Tristan Smith right now. I mean, we got two stud running backs that sit in the bench. Honestly, Dabo's just gotten soft. I mean, the best is not standard. I don't think Dabo was lying when he said, when players start getting money, that he'll stop coaching, you know?
Yeah, I think it's fair to question some of the player personnel decisions right now from Coach Sweeney. And I also think that, you know, JD, when we evaluate player personnel decisions, it's also important to remember that not all of that's on the head ball coach, right? Like, for example, I think the wrong tight end's been playing the whole year. I've said that in press conferences. I've said that on the air. I think Bentancur needs to be the starter, and I think he needs to get the lion's share of reps. But that's Kyle Richardson's decision as to who he's sending out on the field. And a lot of the wide receiver player personnel decisions are Tyler Grisham, right? So while Coach Sweeney does have an impact on player personnel, and while he is the head ball coach that has the ultimate green light or yes or no, a lot of these player personnel and substitution decisions are Garrett Riley and all the position coaches on the offensive side of the football. So I think it's fair to assess it and say that blame needs to be dispersed around the offensive side of the ball, and I agree with you wholeheartedly that the best players need to be on the field.
Yeah, honestly, I just think Garrett Riley needs to be fired right now at this point in time.
Yeah, you know, it's a long season, but I understand the frustration with the play calling. I won't sit here and lie to you. I get why people are frustrated. I think that there are issues with play calling on the offensive side of the ball, and I think that there's a lot of them. So I get where you're coming from.
Yeah, I mean, play calling is terrible. The coaching's terrible right now. I mean, we're 1-3 right now, 0-2 in the conference, and I just think at best, if we get things figured out, we might go 8-4. But the way it's looking, we might win 2 games for the rest of the season. But also, I don't think all the blame's on Carolina. I mean, on Clemson. Carolina just lost 31-7 to Vanderbilt. At least we put up a decent game against Georgia Tech.
Yeah, I mean,
how do you lose to nerds?
That's fair.
Well,
enough.
So are Georgia Tech. So we can't throw stones in glass houses.
Yeah, Georgia Tech's got some pretty good academia. Hey, JD, thanks for the phone call, man. Appreciate you checking in this morning. 654 Roar is the number. Jamie from Easley said, please get Faxon off the radio. I don't know what I said. What did I say, Jamie? I'm sorry.
Well, he'll get off the radio at noon when we make way for Quacken out of bounds.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Jamie. I'm sorry. But in all seriousness, on the Garrett Riley stuff, I think it's more than fair at this juncture to question the play caller of this team. I mean, you're 1-3 with 8 returning starters offensively. Now, I would, again, I try and be as objective as possible, and I also try and give everybody the benefit of the doubt in order to be fair. I think it is fair to say that Garrett Riley is being hindered with what he can do as a play caller with atrocious O-line play and bad decision-making by the quarterback. And I think if we're going to question and critique the play calling, we also need to critique the players on the field that are playing poorly. And that seems fair.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, because what I'll ask you, with an unconfident quarterback who is not good at decision making and like the zone read RPO stuff,
yeah,
with some inconsistencies at wide receiver, I'll just leave that loose, and with an offensive line that is incredibly inconsistent, what plays would you call? I listen, Garrett Riley has not done a good enough job this season. I think he'd be the first one to admit that. But I also know, like, it's difficult to come up with really good ball plays when not even if Cade makes the right decision and the receiver gets open, when you have one out of your 5 offensive linemen not picking up the right guy. When you have tight ends not hitting the right chip block. When you have running backs who aren't helping out in pass protection. When you have wide receivers who, when Cade goes to scramble because the pocket's breaking down, just stand there, put their feet in concrete, and just watch Cade run around, except for Antonio Williams. What is he supposed to call?
Yeah.
Like, everybody shares blame here. Everybody. The play calling isn't good. It's not setting up players for success. The players themselves are not setting up the coach for success. It's what Dabo's saying. He's completely right. You're not playing complementary football. And that's not just offense versus defense. You're not having the run help out the pass. The pass set up the run. None of it is.
Texter gets in and says, I tend to agree with Walt. Cade was clean the majority of the Syracuse game, and once again, he failed to go through progressions, read the defense, and find the open man. I'm not sure why the decision-making got so much more difficult this year. Disagree wholeheartedly with the fact that Cade was clean the majority of the game. Clemson's offensive line graded out as the worst Power 4 team in pass blocking this week. All the Power 4 teams, Clemson was the worst in pass blocking. So the narrative that Cade was clean is false. Cade was not clean the whole game. There were consistently undetected rushers in his face. That can be true about Cade struggling to go through his progression, because it is, right? He's still not seeing the field well. He's still not going through his progressions well. He's still not reading the defense. TJ Moore's been the biggest casualty of that so far. But again, Clemson gave up an immense amount of pressures. 3 of the linemen gave up 3 or more pressures in the same game, which is atrocious. Sadler gave up 5. Lee and Miller, your senior tackles, gave up 3 apiece. 4 Tigers had pass blocking grades at 40.3 or worse. Again, only team in the country to have those terrible of marks on the offensive line in relation to pass blocking this week was the Clemson Tigers. with Colin Sadler at 40.3, Walker Parks at 39.2, Elijah Thurman at 24.3, and Harris Sewell at 17.2. I disagree wholeheartedly with the notion that Cade Klubnik was clean for the majority of this game. The data would indicate otherwise. The film would indicate otherwise. He can be struggling with poor O-line play, but to sit here and pretend like Clemson's not grading out as one of the worst offensive lines in America would be ignorant. They are. Objectively speaking, by the data and by the tape, Clemson's giving up way too many pressures. Clemson's having foundational breakdowns in the zone blocking game. The play that everybody's mad at Cade about on the read with the crack toss, if the guard pulls on time, Cade Klubnik's walking into the end zone and scoring a touchdown. His guard was late.
Now, Harris Sewell was tiptoeing down the line.
His offensive line has been atrocious. So I know that Cade deserves slander. We've slandered Cade on the program. He needs to play better because at the end of the day, you're a big boy. It's your fourth year with the program. You're a senior. It's your third year with the same OC. You're being paid millions of dollars. You've got great wide receivers. I get it. I'm not sitting here banging the drum for two. Two's got to play better. But the notion that this offensive line has been anywhere even near average is a lie. They have not graded out as an average unit in one game. They graded out below average against freaking Troy. Clemson lost the line of scrimmage battle against Troy. You've played four games. You've lost the line of scrimmage battle in four games. That's why you're 1-3. Quarterback plays an issue as well. Open receivers need to be hit. Footwork needs to be better. Mechanics need to be better. Pocket progression needs to be better. But it starts up front with the big boys. And again, out of fairness to Garrett Riley, I think a large part of the reason we've seen the run game abandoned is because he doesn't trust the offensive line to pave the way. Truly. Let's get, who's been holding on the longest here? Is it Ted? Let's get Ted in here. Ted and Sumter. Ted, good to hear from you. Ted, you got us?
Okay, yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. You got us now?
Yes, sir. I got you now.
Good to hear from you. Thanks for the phone call, man.
Yes, sir. I appreciate the call. Hey, I live in Sumter, but I work up in Greenville a lot. And let me tell you, I'm just coming from a different perspective, a different objective.
Okay.
I'm a diehard, I'm diehard Florida State fan.
Hey.
Graduated from FSU in 94.
Nice.
Diehard. Now, let me tell you, I have seen this before. And when I say I've seen this before, I like Coach Swinney. I really do. I didn't like him when he first got the job, but I like Coach Swinney. I think he's a good guy. But like Bobby Bowden, he has made mistakes. Now, our 90s dynasty ended because Bobby, that last caller you had on there, Bobby got soft. Bobby replaced Mark Whip. He had Brad Scott, Rick Stockstill, Mark Rick. We always had great offensive coordinators with the Florida talent. Then he put his son Jeff Bowden in there. Now, to me, the problems that you see with Klubnik come from the OC. I think Garrett Riley and your O-line coach, those guys have been really bad. And Dabo made a bad hire when he hired the fella, I can't remember his name, right after Venables.
Wes Goodwin.
Now, here's the good news. Yes, now here's the good news for Clemson fans. Bobby, Jeff stayed 6 years too long. And when we hired Jimbo, Bobby couldn't get the magic back, and FSU ran him out. Now, Dabo is 55. Like he said, he's 55. He's got something Bobby didn't have. He's got the portal, and Garrett Riley and these coaches are not related to him. Now, honestly, y'all need to get rid of some coaches. I think Clemson can turn it around. They ain't going to fall off the cliff. But he needs – I think and people on ESPN are already saying Garrett Riley got to go. He's got to go, man. I'm sorry. He's got to go. And Klubnik, somebody said this the other day about him. I think with him, it's been two things, poor coaching, poor O-line play. But, bro, you ain't gonna never be Trevor Lawrence. And I'm not saying that to be ugly. I just think – that he it is so much pressure on him to do what Trevor Lawrence did. It's like you're the guy coming after Nick Saban. He's just got to be him and just not try to do too much. So those are my thoughts on Clemson. He's going to have to do like Mike Norvell. He's not in the same position as Mike. Mike does not have Dabo's resume. But if Mike wanted to stay around, he had to fire the DC. He had to fire the O-line coach. He had to fire offensive coordinator, and he had to stop calling plays. I think Dabo, after he won, had so much success like Coach Bowden. He got soft. He didn't keep it businesslike like Nick Saban, and that's why you see the program having these chinks in the armor in it. You go back. There's no reason Florida State or Clemson should ever lose to Duke. That's fireable right there. There's no way on planet Earth the Clemson Tigers or the Florida State Seminoles should lose to Duke in football. So that's a red flag right there. So those are just my comments on the program. I do kind of hate to see y'all at 1-3 because, you know, that we got the ACC bias against us with the SEC stuff. And hopefully y'all can get it turned around, man, and we'll have a good game there in November. And it looks I was hoping we could get Miami, Clemson, and us into the playoff picture. But those are my thoughts. I'll hang up and listen.
Yeah, appreciate you checking in with us, Ted. 654 Roar is the number, and Ted Seminoles look good this year. Still got a lot to play for. Still got a lot to figure out about that team, but yeah, definitely excited for that. And man, talk about Duke Travis catching a stray. Texter gets in. It's 491-491. We appreciate you checking into the program. Says, was Wes a bad hire? We're worse now than with Wes. Maybe the issue wasn't Wes. I chimed back and said, yes, Wes was a bad hire. And then Texter gets back in and said, Wes had a better defense than Allen with worse talent. 4-game sample size for Allen, and also kind of disagree to an extent on the talent perspective. And again, 491, we appreciate you texting in. Keep getting back in. But I don't agree with you on that front specifically. I think when you look at Wes Goodwin and his tenure, you have to look back at all 3 years, and you look at the amount of guys that went to the NFL and were drafted in the first round or the first couple of rounds, and you're like, man, Clemson never had a dominant defense or anything close to that. You look at Barrett Carter and his regression. This is one of my best friends, lifelong best friends, but like, again, objectively speaking, regressed as a player. Came in under Brent Venables. His best year was a freshman. Player development under Wes Goodwin was a massive, massive, massive issue. And we saw more players regress here in Tigertown on the defensive side of the ball, such as a Miles Murphy, such as a Brian Brzee, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, a Barrett Carter, to where there was clearly an issue with the coaching instruction and level of coaching on that side of the ball. So Tom Allen's defense got gashed last week. I'm not making excuses for the guy. He's got to be better, and his unit's got to be better. But I also do think that Wes had an immensely talented group back-to-back-to-back years. They got worse in each of those seasons in succession, and it was the correct decision to make a move this offseason. Doesn't mean all the issues are fixed, though, because Clemson's defense has not been anywhere near good enough this season thus far. We've got in order coming up on the phone lines, Dell, Taylor, Gervonta, and Ricky. Guys, hold on with us through a quick break. Coming to the phone lines right after this with Faxon and John.
When you wake up well-rested on a great mattress, everything becomes clear.
I am just like my mother.
Things you missed when you were tired finally reveal themselves.
I should have just said the baby was cute.
It's Mattress Firm's once-a-year sale and clearance. Get up to 70% off a wide selection of top brands, plus a free adjustable base, all with free and fast delivery. Deals this big won't last long, so don't miss out. The right mattress matters. We'll find yours. Restrictions apply. See store or website for details.
Straight Up Sports is simply all sports all the time. Straight Up Sports is a collection of retired and award-winning sports writers and sports broadcasters from around South Carolina.
Like Bob Gillespie from the State Newspaper,
Scott Kiefer from the Greenville News,
and Mark Sturgis from ESPN Upstate.
Straight Up Sports is about the stories,
just like the days gone by with no editors nor managers involved.
Check us out on Facebook or Twitter or online at straightupsports.net.
Hey y'all, Robert Kraft here, owner of Clemson Sock Shop, located inside New Teak Boutique on Pendleton Square. Whether you're looking for funny socks, funky socks, practical socks, or nostalgic socks, we've got you covered. We're a family-owned small business and are sure to carry a sock that will make you and your feet smile. Shop with us Tuesday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., and Saturdays until 4 inside New Teak Boutique on Pendleton Square, where it's always buy five, get one free. Clemson Sock Shop, it's fun fashion for your feet.
The Tigers don't start the season without practice, and neither should your HVAC system. Get the Blue Ridge Heating and Air Tiger Tune-Up Special now and save over $100. Expert service, just $89, boosts efficiency, prevents breakdowns, and extends your system's life. They'll even clean your outdoor coils if they're dirty. Call Blue Ridge Heating and Air today, a preferred Armstrong Air dealer, and mention Tiger Tune-Up for the $89 offer. That's BlueRidgeHeatingAir.com. BlueRidgeHeatingAir.com.
Discover Reed's Jewelers, America's largest family-owned jeweler, and their state-of-the-art expanded store in Haywood Mall. The same location, with nearly twice the showroom space as before. Dedicated to bringing you amazing savings on diamonds, watches, and more. All with the same superior customer service they've always provided. You'll be amazed at the 21st century appeal of the new Reed's Jewelers expanded store. Reed's Jewelers, next to Belk on the top floor in Haywood Mall. Online at Reeds.com.
Hey, Clemson family. I'm Jeff Scott, former assistant coach and proud member of two national championship teams. Success on the football field takes teamwork, vision, and a great game plan. I partnered with fellow Clemson alum Eric Newton to create Newton Scott & Associates. From Tigertown to Lake Kiwi, we're your championship team, here to help you buy, sell, or build. When it's time to make your next move, trust the winning team, Newton Scott & Associates. Real estate, the Clemson way. Visit us at newtonscottsc.com.
What's up, everybody? Sam Jones here. It's rivalry week in the upstate yet again on the Tri-County Technical College High School Football Game of the Week presented by Ingles. The JL Man Patriots head on the road to face off against the Greenville Red Raiders in a Spirit Week matchup between two heated rivals. Join us live here on The Roar this Friday night and every Friday night, where every day is game day.
A scholarship doesn't just pay for school.
When I first started out, I'd be around a baseball field all day, just watching the guys' feet, like how they're moving, how they're breaking out of the clay. Turfgrass management is not just cutting grass. There's so much more to it.
It turns passion into purpose.
The South Carolina Education Lottery definitely allowed me to find myself again, to get an education, eventually starting my organization. I got legs.
Adam and Greg are two of over 750,000 Life Scholars giving back for a better South Carolina. Visit sceducationlottery.com/betteryou.
Book your next party at Carson Steakhouse in Anderson with a large private dining room to suit all of life's celebrations, corporate and social group events. Host a family or school reunion to remember. Book your reservation and they handle the rest. Double fried chicken wings, fresh baked yeast rolls, hand-cut steaks, grilled teriyaki salmon, and fresh strawberry shortcake, just to name a few delicious menu items. Make your reservation today. Call 226-9400. Again, that's 226-9400. Carson Steakhouse, Anderson.
High school football, college football, and the NFL. We're broadcasting games at all three levels and breaking it all down. We are The Roar, part of the ESPN family.
Welcome you back in. It's the final segment of hour number two here on the program. Facts and Children's John Hite continuing on 105.5, 97.5 The Roar. 654-ROAR is the number if you want to get in with us. Texter gets in and says, Facts, an honest question. Can you name one player that's left Clemson a better player than when they arrived since 2020? I can't think of one. Didn't leave the exact same or worse. I think we have a development problem, and that's the answer to all of this. Seems like every season the same story. A breakout freshman that disappoint the rest of their careers. You know, I do think player development's an issue. I said this yesterday. I think it's one of the primary issues for Clemson. I also don't think it's as black and white as that. Texter 947, we appreciate you getting in, and I think you bring up a very valid point. Like, for example, Brissy is dealing with, like, the worst possible human cards to be dealt to a human being off the field. So, like, did he regress? Yeah. But I also think there's some context there. A lot of these guys have been ravaged with really bad injury luck. Like, I'm sure he doesn't care if I say it. Now, Barrett Carter played on a bum shoulder back-to-back years. You know how hard it is to tackle when your shoulder is in so much pain that you're having to get treatment after every single practice and every single game, and you're getting pregame shots with things in your arm just so you can get on the football field? Again, he'll never tell you all that because he's humble and he loves this place, even with a bunch of people ripping him for missing tackles last year. That dude gave it all for the Paw. He could have very easily checked out with his agent and protected his NFL draft stock, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. He suited up each and every game with a bum shoulder and never complained about it and never made excuses. So, like, I do think that there's a lot of certain scenarios that play into it like that. You know somebody that developed? Davis Allen. Davis Allen developed pretty extensively throughout the course of his career and had a big breakout season towards the tail end of his career. Think he was underutilized and think he was a really good player. Think there's been a couple stories of offensive line development in the last 5 years, even though that's been a weakness in totality for Clemson. So, you know, I get the point. I think player development is an issue, but at the same time, like, I do think that we also have to evaluate things objectively and take a step back. Sometimes the players just aren't good enough. There are things
that sometimes the players don't put the necessary work in.
Also true. Like, there is only so much a coach and or a positional coach can do to develop you. You have to want it yourself. And you also have to have a natural talent and a natural feel for the position. Everybody wants to talk about the primary issues with Cade Klubnik, and I think most of them are wrong. I think most people are wrong, and they're off the mark when evaluating Cade Klubnik. I just don't think Cade has a natural feel for the quarterback position. I don't think he has the natural game IQ necessary to be an elite quarterback. I think we saw last year, when the infrastructure around him is good, he can be really good. You keep him clean in the pocket, you give him good receivers, he can make the majority of the throws, he's mobile enough to make some dynamic plays outside the pocket, he had some flashes of excellence. But we have a 3-year sample size now with Cade. 2 years, he's had a bad infrastructure. 2 years, he's had a bad offensive lineman. 2 years, he's played poorly. 1 year, he had a good offensive line and a good infrastructure, and he played really well, and Clemson went to the playoffs. So, like, there are things that are just right there in front of you that I like to use for evaluation when it comes to stuff like that, but I do think that player development is an issue regardless of what's being said. Texter gets in and says, facts and my fellow Gwinnettian, spitting Barrett Carter facts, who is also a fellow Gwinnettian. Again, people are going to give him crap because he missed a ton of tackles. If everybody had the mentality that Barrett Carter, and not just saying this because he's my friend, because he would never, he'd probably be mad at me if I told everybody that he was injured for the last 2 years, but that dude was, his body was dying on him. His body was absolutely dying on him. Legs, shoulder, he's coming to class with things wrapped up in the Normatec and a big ice pack on his shoulder. Like, he battled through some ridiculous injury adversity and still never complained, never made excuses to the media, and suited it up. If you had more people with that mentality in the locker room this year, you're 3-1 or 4-0. These dudes don't want it like the previous generations of Clemson football did. And that was the main topic on itinerary yesterday. Let's get Dell in Greenville in here. Dell, good to hear from you. Appreciate the phone call.
Yes, good morning, guys. How you guys doing?
Doing well, man. Dell, how are you?
I'm doing just fine. Guys, I'm beginning to wonder that the solutions to the problem or the problems are still in this building. Listening to Dabo's call-in show last night just kind of left me bewildered. I thought I was going to leave a little bit feeling better about the state of things. But just some of the things he says kind of left me scratching my head. He all of a sudden now is pretty adamant that the record doesn't define these guys. And I get that in the macro, but in the micro, your job is to be a football player at a pretty elite program. This is like your – I get it. Christ is our ultimate definer. That's great. But – here on this earth, like, you're a football player. That is your the most defining thing about you. So I'm worried that the messaging is just not what it needs to be in a time where we're 1-3, and the sense of urgency just doesn't seem to be there. Also, he made a comment. He just seems to be the most tone-deaf guy out there. He made a comment that has never been about the winning. It's about how you play and all this stuff, and that's great. But I bet I know my family would have liked to have known as an IPTE donor that we weren't concerned that much with the winning when we donated money for the past, 30-something years, that we no longer care about winning. I'm sure that he has a desire to win, but I'm worried that his mindset on how we get to that winning point or even what his real goals are. Are we a staffing agency? Or are we a football program first? Because it seems like we've got those two things confused. And I get it's great, the things he's done for these guys. But he is there to coach football. And so just worried that maybe the Florida State fan had a point. And I'm worried that he's not the guy that's going to be able to turn things around. Again, he gave me the best years of my life, winning national championships. But it doesn't seem like he's the same guy when he talks that he used to be. And I'll take your comments off the air.
Yeah, I appreciate you checking in with us, Dell. 654-ROAR is the number. And you know what? Listen, I listened to Tiger Calls last night. I had a broadcast, so I had to go catch it back on the website. Wasn't able to catch it in real time. I had Furman men's soccer last night. It was actually a pretty crap game, but Furman won it at the end. I'm conflicted on Sweeney's demeanor in the press conference. Listen, man, like, I love Dabo Sweeney. Let me just go ahead and preface everything I'm about to say with that, man. And when you look at Little John's, renovation and the elevation of the men's basketball program and the elevation of the baseball program with Bakich and bringing him in and the recruiting and portal uptick there, women's basketball landed another top 25 recruit the other day. Lacrosse is one of the best programs in the country. Men's soccer, women's soccer, national contenders perennially with Radwanski and Noonan. A lot of this is a byproduct of what Dabo's done for this athletic department and football program and university as a whole. And while understanding that, Dell has validity to his points about the priority needs to be coaching football and winning football games. Now, I also do understand as a part of that, Dabo Swinney's demeanor in these press conferences, Tiger calls, etc., a lot of that is messaging to his team. And a lot of that is trying to incite some sort of fire in his team. And let's face it, Clemson's desperate right now. You're 1-3 and you're soul searching. You came into the season as a national championship contender, and you haven't lived up to that bill or anything close thus far. So I think Dell has some validity to his points. I agree with some. I disagree with some. One thing I will say is this. Sweeney behind closed doors is a lot different with Sweeney than Sweeney with the media. And nobody wants to win more than Dabo Sweeney. I think that you hear his media comments because it's the only availability that you get of Dabo Sweeney every week, and I get that. And people take that and they run with it. And they're like, oh, he must not be intense behind closed doors. He's lost his drive. He's lost his edge. He's lost his fire. Nobody is more pissed on planet Earth right now being 1-3 than Dabo Sweeney. Nobody. He's given his life to this institution. He's given his career to this institution. He has elevated this program and athletic department out of the mud into a national championship contender perennially. And while that might not be what Clemson is right now, I think he's the guy that can get you back to the mountaintop. But I agree that there needs to be some philosophical changes at this juncture to do that. And I think coaching changes probably need to be something that's considered on both sides of the football right now, regardless of where that may be. Let's get Taylor and Easley in here. Taylor, good to hear from you.
Yes. I'm with you on, you know, Dabo is the one that can get us back to the mountaintop. I mean, he has taken this program to heights that it's never been to. I just had a question about when a head coach anywhere in the country hires a new offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, a lot of times it's up to that specific coordinator who their personnel is going to be. Who is good? You know, if somebody hires an offensive coordinator, who's going to coach running backs? Who's going to coach wide receivers? Is that the same? Is Dabo, whenever he hires these guys like, you know, Garrett Riley and Tom Allen, does he give them the full reins of, hey, bring your guys who you want to be with you, bring your team, you know, and kind of give them the reins to, you know, have their personnel with them? Or is he telling them, hey, you know, you're the offensive coordinator, but I'm just going to go ahead and tell you Tyler Grisham coaches wide receivers, and C.J. Spiller coaches running backs. You've got to get along with them, and you've got to, you know, mesh with them. You know, when he hires Tom Allen, does he just tell him, hey, Ben Boulware is the linebackers coach? I mean, is that how Dabo is doing it, or is he giving them the reins and they have chosen to keep these guys? I just wanted to kind of get your thoughts on that and see if you think that's what Dabo's doing, or is he doing something else?
Yeah, I appreciate you checking in with us, Taylor. Thanks for the phone call, man. We're close to the top of the hour, so I'm going to let you go. Keep calling back in, Taylor. And so here's the thing. I'm conflicted on how to feel about this because I've watched every single game of 2022 TCU. And Clemson's offense looks nothing like 2022 TCU. Just absolutely nothing. Like, foundationally, principle-wise, schematically, they look nothing like it. They don't use the tight end. They don't use the quarterback run game. I do think a part of that is the player personnel accessible to Coach Riley at TCU, right? He has pulling guards that are athletic and that are the profile players to be able to use that counter game as the foundation of their run game. And that's just not something that's worked out at Clemson. You remember Clemson got to 4-4. People want to blame Cade Klubnik. That team was terrible. People want to blame Cade Klubnik. Clemson was 4-4 because they insisted on running counter for the first 8 games of the season and had no identity in the run game. Like, they had a first-year starter with puppy dog eyes thrown to Troy Stellato trying to run counter repeatedly and didn't have the profile players to do such. So you go to gap scheming, you simplify it, and Maffa burns down the house against Notre Dame, and you rip off a win streak when you go to more simple blocking. I do think a part of this is the fact that Garrett Riley hasn't had the personnel on the offensive line to use his foundational elements of the run game that he established at TCU. Do you think that's fair to say, John?
Yeah, absolutely. Matt Luke and Thomas Austin don't. You know, we've heard Coach Sweeney say you want big people to move big people. Well, the problem with wanting to run a lot of that air raid stuff is you don't want as big people. You want faster, smaller offensive linemen to get on the outside and the perimeter. So I think there's a little bit of conflict there between the type of offensive lineman that you're getting and what you may want for the counter stuff. But I also think that Garrett Riley needs to understand, too, that with the personnel at hand, that maybe just scrap the counter entirely and find a scheme that works best for the players you got.
For sure. All right, we've got the phone lines jumping like Jordan in 95. Ricky, Gervonta, Noah, and Dre in order on the other side of a quick break. We're hitting all four phone calls in the next segment. Stick with us through the top of the hour with Vaxson and John.
WCCP-FM 105.5, Clemson, Greenville, Anderson, WAHT-AM 15.